This is the Sexy Life podcast for women who want to experience the best sex, healthy and happy intimate relationships, and live a life that lights up your heart and soul. I'm Sarah Rose Bright, a sex and intimacy coach and the creator of Intimate Sexuality. It's my joy to help women and couples to love and celebrate their sexuality, create fulfilling relationships, and find their pleasure, playfulness, and passion for life. A sexy life isn't the perfect, polished life. This is living from our hearts and appreciating and celebrating the magic of life in all its messy glory, embracing the reality of our humanness, the highs and the lows, the beauty and the challenges. I invite you to join me and my expert guests for candid, juicy, and inspiring conversations around sex, relationships, and life today. Whether you're curious about what's possible or committed to living your most wonderful and fulfilling life, I'm so happy you are here. If you want to find out all about orgasms, then you're in the right place. As this episode, I talk with orgasm expert and self-confessed pleasure nerd, Mangala Holland. And Mangala is going to share her definition of orgasms and how it differs from the mainstream understanding. She talks about the difference between orgasms and orgasmic states, the different types of orgasms, and so, so much more. And so I really do hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did. Welcome to this episode of the Sexy Life podcast. And I'm delighted today to be joined by Mangala Holland. Welcome.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today. And I'd love for you to start by telling the listeners a little bit about you and what you do.
So I am a women's sexuality and empowerment facilitator, coach, and mentor. I've been in this world quite a long time, like been on my own journey with pleasure and sexuality for around 13 years, and I've been teaching in this space for coming up for a decade. So I've been around the block a few times. I am originally from the UK, and I have a background in the corporate world, and in my late 30s, I realized I was completely burnt out. So I took a year off to travel and ended up spending about 12 years overseas. So I moved back to England in the middle of the pandemic, and I'm now settled just up the road from you in Glasgow.
Fantastic. And so tell me a little bit about your journey with sex and pleasure. So you talked about being burnt out. So I'd love to hear what happened for you.
Yeah. So, I mean, back in the day, you know, it was a very different version of me back then. I was a full on party animal, as many of us were, through the 90s and into that first decade of, you know, into the 2000s. Full on raver, basically. And I was also working in the corporate environment. I was working in stockbrokers and legal firms, and it felt a bit like Alan Partridge. I was traveling all over the UK for my job and staying in hotels most of the week, and then coming home and then just partying all weekend and leading this weird double life, which I managed to do for a very long time. And then that's eventually I hit burnout with that. It's like it just became really unsustainable, and felt like my body was screaming at me and saying, you can't keep on doing this. And as I kind of started to sober up and come out the other side of that experience, I just realized I was just completely disconnected from my pleasure and my body. And I had so much shame around my sexuality. Some of that was from my upbringing, and my dad was very open-minded about a lot of stuff, but he'd been brought up as a Catholic and was still holding on to a lot of stuff around that. So no sex before marriage, no boys, all this kind of stuff. So I grew up with these very controlling, strict messages around sex and sexuality and pleasure, and the message was just don't get in trouble. That was it, don't get in trouble. So it really put a lot of fear into me. And while I was a big party animal, I was just having loads of one night stands and really disconnected. And I'd wake up in the morning and be like, oh my God, who are you? What have I done? I can't remember anything. And really, when I look back now, it's like there was no, how can that be consensual? I had no concept of what was good for me and what wasn't. So I ended up in a lot of very sketchy situations because I just throw myself into things because I was drunk or high or whatever. And so as I started to become a bit more as I started to go on my healing journey and sobered up, and I got more into yoga and meditation and spirituality, and I realized as I started doing that, I realized that the core of it was my sexuality. That's where my biggest block was. That's where the disconnect was. It was the shame I felt around my body. I hated my body. I felt like I'd let so many men just do whatever they wanted to me and given away my power so much. And so it was a really deep journey of reclaiming my pleasure for myself. And during my explorations, I started to explore more sexuality and neo-tantra. And some of the stuff I was exploring wasn't particularly wholesome, but at the same time, I did start to make this connection to my body and my pleasure. And I had my first cervical orgasm, and I was like, oh my God, everybody needs to know what this is. This is amazing. And oh my God. And it really changed the whole trajectory of my life, I would say.
That cervical orgasm.
It was like literally another world opened up to me, and it's like, oh my God, this is what our bodies are capable of. It's incredible.
Tell me about some of the work that you do with women that you've been doing.
So I work with women and vulva owners, particularly around orgasm and helping them connect to their bodies, explore who they are authentically as a sensual and sexual person, and really like helping people get to the truth of that. So not what society says, not what our partners think, not what the experts say, but it's like, what is your truth? Who are you? What's your pleasure? What are your desires? And really helping people explore that for themselves so that they can become orgasmic and multi-orgasmic and explore these deeper, powerful states of pleasure and help people take that into the rest of their lives because it impacts everything. It impacts our work, our relationships, our family dynamics, our earning potential, all of it. And so I'm really passionate about supporting people to do that. So some of that work is one-to-one, some of it is in group programs, and I'm also training facilitators as well to do what I do. And it's just the most rewarding work possible, like just like I'm sure like you, I get to spend all my days talking about pleasure and orgasms and vulvas and things like that. And it's just to have clients who can ask things that they've never felt comfortable sharing with anyone before, or voicing things that they've kept to themselves all their lives. It's like it's a huge honor to be able to hold that space for people.
It's so precious and so special, isn't it? And it's never any less than that, no matter how many times it happens, because not having two dissimilar stories, a lot of resonances with your story of partying and corporate life and how sexuality was a thing that was holding me back. And so to be part of somebody else's journey on that liberation from the shutdown sexuality, the shame sexuality that so many of us grew up with is just such a deep honor.
And my clients are all over the world, and it's so inspiring seeing them connect in with this, and I'll admit, when I was living in Australia before I moved back to the UK, and I had a thriving business there, and when I was like deciding to come back, it was like, oh my God, is England ready for this? Is England ready? Like, oh my God, do I really? And like, oh me, do I have to, oh God, because I had all these like assumptions about how shut down people in England are and how much repression there is. And while, yes, that's true, there's also like people are really thirsty for this stuff. People are really wanting change. And I think if the last 2 years has shown us anything, it's we can't just keep sweeping stuff under the carpet and pretending it's not there.
Yeah, and there's been such a huge awakening in this area across the world, hasn't there, the last few years, which I'm sure we'll get on to talk about. It's got some great stuff, but it also has some big shadow around some of definitely. That as well. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about the how this impacts every aspect of your life, you use the word, the phrase orgasmic confidence. Is this what you're talking about with orgasmic confidence?
Yeah, totally. So orgasmic confidence is the methodology that I've created. It's the roadmap that I use to take people from being disconnected and numb and shut down and not in touch with their pleasure and their sexuality, all the way through to experiencing beautiful, deep, nourishing, life-affirming, beautiful orgasms. And at the same time, orgasmic confidence, I believe, is kind of a way of being. It's a way of being in the world. It's like when we're able to be so fully connected to what works for us that we can ask for that from a partner without feeling with, you know, being able to do that, having the confidence to be able to ask for what we want or to know what we want and be able to discuss it, or you know, to let go of shame and be able to express yourself in the bedroom. But it does affect every part of your life. And I have clients that will say to me, like there's one client in particular, she's like, the conversations with my teenage daughters have really shifted since I've started doing this work. And now we're having these really intimate, profound conversations. And she said, like, you know, my God, I'm just so grateful they can come to me about this stuff. And that we can have these conversations, which, because this is so far removed from what she'd experienced as a teen with her mum, this kind of stuff. And I've had clients who, one client of mine was really high up in the Navy, in the military, and she had to go into these boardrooms where she'd be the only female, and she'd absolutely rock it because she was able to be in touch with, you know, her confidence, and she was able to stay in her body and to feel what was going on there, and then to be able to not be intimidated but be able to ask really, really good questions to get people thinking and just be able to steer the conversation the way she wanted to, which is, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. And you call yourself, I noticed on the website, one of the things is the orgasm queen. Is it orgasm queen? Is it embodiment queen? Or
pleasure nerd, embodiment queen, orgasm queen, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, orgasm queen, but I love it. Yeah. So I'd love to hear, how do you define orgasm?
Oh, this is such a juicy question. I'm glad you asked that. And it's something that we spend a lot of time in my facilitator training kind of pulling apart, because it's so much more than just these physical things that, you know, it's way more than just a physical contraction in the body that's like this, whether that's a peak experience or whatever it is. I really believe in orgasmic states, that we can be in orgasmic states. And I've had experiences where I've experienced deep orgasmic states from a really beautiful piece of dark chocolate. I've had orgasmic experiences on my elbow. I've had, you know, just like, it's not just a genital thing. And I think we all experience these differently, particularly when it comes to like the powerful internal orgasms like G-spot and cervical orgasms. Like there is definitely there's definitely some things that happen physically, but there's so much more than that, and it can vary so much for different people and will show up differently. But often what's really interesting in this work is when people are going through, like they've moved through numbness and they're starting to feel sensation and things get more pleasurable, and as they're exploring internal work and internal exploration, they'll say things like, well, I'm not sure if that was an orgasm or not, you know. And it's, I don't know if you've heard that from your clients, and it's like we've been conditioned all our lives to question what our own bodies Same. Isn't that interesting? Or I'm not sure if that was my cervix that I touched. I'm like, well, what is making you doubt that? And it's so much more empowering when you say, oh, what if this is orgasm? What if I can then stay in this? What if I can play with it more? What if those subtle sensations can get louder? What if I can stay here a bit longer? What if, and just start to play with different components? So it's like the question you ask is really big. And I think there's no, I think all I would say is like, oh, it's oh, I'm almost lost to try and put it into words because it is such a big thing. But I do believe when we can look at states and experiences rather than just some physical sensations or pulses or contractions in the genitals, it opens up a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that orgasmic states. And you look at the sort of standard medical definition of orgasm, and it is just tension of the body and a release of tension. It's pretty much that's all it is, isn't it? It's so limited.
It is limited, and particularly that doesn't work for so much of the internal orgasms because they are way less tension based and need a certain level of relaxation and softness to be able to experience them. And for some people, there can be really strong physical sensations, but for other people, it's much more subtle. And this is again where I think it varies so much from person to person. And I don't know how much research has been done on these other orgasms as well. There's so much more to discover than what the medical world tells us.
That's such a point, important point, because I think that we, as you shared, we've been raised on so many different levels to not trust our bodies or not trust our own experience, and bringing that home to really listening and building that trust in your body, in your experience, and what true is true for you, and what an orgasm looks like for you, and how it feels for you, and starting from there. So when you have women coming to you around sort of feeling numbness and not maybe not experiencing orgasms, or experiencing orgasms that are maybe not very fulfilling, if someone's listening in that place, what words of wisdom do you have?
I always say that we start from where you are, and so if you're experiencing numbness, it can be so easy to be stuck in the frustration of that and just like, oh, this is my body's broken, or I'm stuck here, and it's never going to shift. And I've worked with so many people where it is totally possible to shift it. And the way I work is we do a lot of work with embodiment, so not just diving straight into genital stuff and trying to fix things from there, but really looking at the whole of your body and finding ways to move your body and to explore your body to, yeah, well, firstly, to make sure that you feel safe in your body and that you feel that you can stay there, which is absolutely essential. So many people say, oh, I'm stuck in my head and it's really blocking my pleasure. And so there's ways that I work with clients to help them be able to stay more in the body. And then we start to work with different pathways to pleasure and creating new pathways to pleasure through the body. So it becomes much more about pleasure in a wider sense and not just genital, but like what's happening all over your body and what are the other areas that feel really good and what else in your life is really good and how can you orient more towards joy and relaxation and nourishment in all areas of your life because it's all so connected. So there's so much. And then from there, then it's a real what I really love to do is support clients to go at their own pace to awaken pleasure, and giving them the tools and the resources and the support to do that and really meeting them where they're at. So it's not about pushing people over any edges into strong experiences that they can't integrate. It's about helping them increase their capacity, steady, steady, slow, steady, gentle. And getting them to tune into their truth. And this is where sustainable, lasting change is really possible.
Yeah, thank you. That's such lovely to hear. For anyone out there listening that, you know, as unfortunately many women do, feel their bodies are broken because their bodies aren't working in how they maybe think they should work, or they've maybe given messages from doctors or lovers or all sorts. And just that message alone is so important for some women to hear that nobody's broken.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, some of this stuff is, you know, what we've been, messages we've been given from other people, and it's not our, it's not our truth. And I really love to support people in actually finding out, well, what is your truth? And to know that change is possible. Absolutely, it is possible. And if you're doing what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always got as well. So it's sometimes it requires working with someone who can show you some of the blind spots or help you get out of certain patterns or habits you've got into, or just trying new things in a way that feels good and doesn't feel too far out of your comfort zone. It's like finding the right level with that.
Yeah, gorgeous. And so I'd love you to speak as well of the different types of orgasms, because you've mentioned G-spot, you've mentioned cervical orgasms, and you know, often people say to me, you know, what are these things, where do I start, do they even exist, is it even possible for me, and so I'd love you to speak to that.
Yeah, and you know, different schools of thought and different teachers will say different things. Some will say there's 7 types of orgasm. Someone else will say there's 28. You know, there's all different theories out there. So there's the main ones that we know, the ones that are most common, is the clitoral orgasm, which is the one that is typically tends to be the one that is most easily achieved for people with vulvas. And that's because it's external and the clitoris has nerve endings that are there just purely for pleasure and nothing else. But of the people who experience that clitoral orgasm, there's a lot of people can only experience that through self-pleasure and not through lovemaking, which is really, really common. And it's also really common that people haven't experienced orgasm at all, or they used to be able to, and then for some reason it stops. And you know, that is, so I really want to normalize that, because it can really seem sometimes like there's this, you know, what we see in the movies is everybody's having amazing sex and orgasms, and that can make you feel even worse if you're not in that camp. So I think it's really important to name that. And then in the work I do with clients, there's certain areas inside the vaginal canal that we specifically work with, so the G-spot and the cervix being two of the main ones, because those kind of orgasms feel very much more fulfilling to the folks. They can go on a lot longer, they can feel more emotionally satisfying and fulfilling. It can feel like a much more profound, deep experience, even spiritual experience. And I've had clients have full visual experiences. You know, it can get quite trippy and almost psychedelic when it comes to cervical orgasms. So it's like, wow, is my body capable of that? And then some people will report things like urinary orgasms and anal orgasms and nipple orgasms and energy orgasms and all of these. You know, there's so many different ways we can explore this. And one of the things I would say is, like, sometimes it's good not to get too caught up in where this is coming from. It's like, if you're exploring something inside and it's feeling good, follow what feels good and see where you end up, rather than going into your head and going, oh, what kind of orgasm is this, and what, you know, getting too technical about it, because people can get stuck in that as well.
Or it becomes the goal, doesn't it? I've got to achieve this,
and exactly.
A lot of stress follows that, so,
And we have enough of that in our lives already. And I'm real big fan of getting rid of, taking the goals off the table and approaching intimacy and pleasure from a non-goal oriented place, which can seem very counterintuitive if you've not experienced orgasm, or you're not experiencing the kind of orgasm you like. to have someone say, take the goal off the table. It's like, yeah, that's easier said than done. You know, I really want this. But it is kind of a paradox when it comes to female pleasure. This is where we do need to take the goal off the table.
Yeah. And what's your view on vibrators? Because that's always a big question that I get asked a lot, and I'd love to hear your take on that.
Yeah. So I have a mixed view. Like, I spent a long time in the neo-tantra scene, which was, and the environment I was in was really dogmatic. And it was like, you know, vibrators are the devil. The clitoris is the devil. You know, you should only be having these deep internal orgasms, and everything else is not spiritual. And I don't believe that's particularly helpful. And I really believe any orgasm is better than no orgasm. And, you know, see what gets you there and start from there. And if that's starts with a vibrator, well, that's a good starting point. But what I will say is I have worked with people who've ended up becoming, they've had the clitoris got completely desensitized and numb for around 6 months because of using strong toys with very strong settings. So you can get desensitized to these powerful vibrations very quickly, and my clients were saying, well, that didn't feel good to me, it didn't feel nourishing to me. It's like, oh, was I even involved in that? You know, I've just had this orgasm. It's like, was I even there for that? And so if that's not serving you or it's not satisfying you, then I'd say it's good to explore something else. And if you do want to explore the deeper internal orgasms, like G-spot and cervical orgasms, they require a lot more awareness of subtlety of sensation. And in order to increase the volume on that subtlety so that it becomes enjoyable, then just leaving the vibrator alone for a bit can be really helpful.
Yeah.
In exploring those. And then, you know, then I also have clients who are like, you know, I've just had a really shit day at work and I just need to let off some steam. It's like, go for it, enjoy it, you know. We don't always have time for the gourmet feast, you know. Sometimes we just need the drive-through McDonald's. But yeah, Living on drive-through McDonald's is probably not a good thing to do. And there's so much more we can enjoy than that. So
yeah. I just love it. I just remember when I threw away my Hitachi wand. Do you remember the Hitachi wands that I had many years ago? And it was a real moment because it was at that point of really wanting to explore deeper. Mm. And I'd have like multiple orgasms on this Hitachi wand, but it was just so fast.
Yeah.
And that's what I felt like. I was bypassing my body, sort of. I knew there was more intelligence in my body to explore. Yeah. But it was quite a thing of letting go of that when it had so much pleasure. But I knew at that point it was holding me back.
It's almost like it's like just going for a quick, cheap fix, you know, which is good and fine all on its own. But it's like when you know that if your body's telling you, you know what, there's more to this.
Yeah.
And I want to know myself inside out and know what my body's truly capable of. Then, and I had a lot of clients who, like, particularly my group programs, it's like a lot of them will be like, you know, I've had this thing for years and it's got all these old memories attached to it and it's made of plastic, and you know, it's like, and it feels cheap and nasty and it's associated with shame and all these things. It's like, maybe it's time to throw that out and upgrade, you know, get something that feels beautiful and that feels sacred and that really feels aligned with who you are now and where you want to go in your life.
Yeah.
And that can be a really good thing to do. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you mentioned neo-tantra there. What is neo-tantra? How would you describe that?
So I am also a practitioner, a student of classical tantra. So and the two often get a bit mishmashed and confused with people. And so people think, when they hear the word tantra, they think sex, they think of these crazy workshops, they often think of Sting. I mean, when I first heard of tantra, that's It was reading about Sting in the newspapers. But classical tantra is mostly come from the Hindu and Buddhist traditions, and it's very specific technology, meditations and rituals. It's really about spiritual advancement, and is a very specific form of spiritual practice, and there's nothing in there that is really to do with sexuality unless you're already very, very advanced on your path. And then there's a few in some of the scriptures, there's a few verses that talk about sexual union, but that's really for very, very, very advanced practitioners. And then Neo Tantra is really came from like Osho in the 60s and 70s and came more out of those kind of streams from those teachers, and is really the idea of saying, well, you know, everything is sacred in the universe, and that includes our bodies and that includes sexuality. And so we can explore sexuality through a spiritual lens. So that's more of the idea of it, and how we see this playing out in the sexuality world today is a lot of workshops and a lot of things like where you've got things like eye gazing and yoni and linga massage and heavy breath work and intense practices that are supposed to take you beyond your comfort zone and blow you wide open and all these kind of things. So there's some good practitioners out there, and there's an awful lot of murky stuff out there as well that you touched on shadow stuff before. It pays to be very, very careful who you work with, because there's a lot of abuse that happens in those circles. And if you don't know what you're walking into, or you work with the wrong people, you get pushed over your edges, it can be incredibly traumatic. And it's not something that I would recommend people to go into if they've got a history of sexual trauma, for example. Things are still fresh for them. It can put you further back than on your journey.
And I think it's really important to just sort of highlight, you know, what you were sharing about your approach of going at the person's pace, mm-hmm. and doing things gently, step by step, and giving somebody time to expand their capacity, mm-hmm. versus getting chucked into the workshop space where you know, one of the reasons I wanted to interview you is I see you as a practitioner with a heap of integrity, and you've written a lot about the tantra world and the abuse in spiritual circles, and you know, you share articles and different things on that to bring awareness to it, because that's the shadow side of the growth in sexuality in the last few years. And there's places where there's abusive, and there's places also where like lack of trauma training and all these different things. And I've been in that place where I've been pushed beyond my limits and really didn't realize, because I didn't know the trauma that I was in when I entered the spaces at the time.
Exactly.
And it really did frazzle me out, and I had to sort of walk away from all of that, for my own healing and my own sanity. And so it's a huge thing. So if somebody's like looking to go out into whether it's tantra, but also a lot of other sex positive spaces and workshops and different things, you've shared like, obviously, if they're in a place where there's active trauma, that wouldn't be a wise step. But what else might people look out for in terms of red flags, if they or green flags, actually? What would they look out?
Well, great question. So I think red flags are the facilitators or their assistants intimate with their participants. There's a lot of sex between students and teachers, and that is a massive red flag to me. That's a clear power dynamic. So if there, and there are plenty of organizations and teachers out there that do have sex with their students and think that that is legitimate and that's how people heal and evolve, through receiving some kind of initiation through the teacher, and I think that's just abuse, and I would steer clear of it. I would ask around, but it's sticky. It's difficult asking around because, you know, often people say, oh, I had an amazing experience. And then someone else is like, that was deeply traumatic for me, you know, because we're all different. So what I would suggest is if you are drawn to something, like, do some asking around, do some research. Don't just go on a flashy website, because a lot of people are very good at marketing more than they are facilitating, and that's something to be aware of. And to do some asking around. And then I think be really good is to reach out to the facilitator if you're curious or you're interested, and if you're not sure if that's the right space for you, and ask, are you trauma informed? And ask, and then, and if they say yes, then ask them what training they've done in that sphere, ask them what their experience is, ask them what trauma-informed means to them. This is something I got from a mentor that I'm working with. I'm doing some more trauma-informed training myself right now, and that was one of the things that she recommends saying is, you know, ask, well, are you trauma informed? And then, well, what does that mean to you? Because that will give you some feedback on as to whether that feels good to you. I don't think it's enough to be able to be told, oh, you can just sit this out if you need to. You know, I think there needs to be more active consent in these workshop spaces, because it's very difficult to be the one person to put your hand up and say, oh, I'm not comfortable with this, if everyone else looks like they're all right with it. And you might feel like, oh my God, what's wrong with me, and everyone else is fine. And some of those other people who look like they're fine might be just doing it because they think everyone else is doing it. It can get really, really sticky. So some green flags there would be to look for people who really have got a good, solid reputation in the industry, that they've got good trauma-informed training behind them, or they're very aware in that area, that they've got good assistance around them, that they're not, that they, you know, it's like, it's not about just getting bums on seats. And I think that's a bit of a danger in this world. It's like people just get anyone to sign up. I think going into spaces where there's a bit of a screening process, I screen everybody, you know, whatever you do with me, we'll, if it's one-to-one, we'll have a good long conversation first to make sure it's a good fit. If it's one of my group programs, even if it's just a 3-month group program with me, that's like one of my entry level programs, there's still a form I want you to fill in to tell me, you know, where you're at and whether there's anything that's fresh for you, and making sure to make sure it's a good fit, and that I'm the best person to help you. I think this is really important.
No, thank you. There's some really great stuff there. And like you shared, it needs more digging than just a friend saying, this has been amazing. Mm-hmm. And also I say to people, it may just not be for you to go to these workshops, because I've had a lot of people feel, I should have a yoni massage and I should be going to these workshops. Yeah. And actually, it's just not for everybody either. And it doesn't mean anything. It's okay to not be in those spaces.
And this is it, especially when it comes to yoni massage, since you mentioned that, like, this is one area that where I would say, and I always get flack for saying this, but I believe really work with a female practitioner first. Don't go and work with a dude, because I question, there's like one or two male practitioners in the world that I would, like, literally two I can think of that I would recommend. There's so much can go wrong when you're working with a male practitioner in that space, and I question why men want to step into that work, really. You know, it can be very sticky. So and not everybody, it's not right for everybody, and it's okay if it's not right for you.
It's like, I might want to go on holiday in Japan and somebody else doesn't. It's like, we just all have different things, but when it comes to sex, it can feel like, oh, should I be in this place? And there's a lot more energy and charge with it, and I'm totally with you around working with a female practitioner first. And it's a massive big thing to go and do something like that and to feel ready. And I think it all comes back to what you were saying earlier about trusting yourself. If as well, it's like if something doesn't feel right in these spaces when you're approaching them, when you're talking to them, when you're in them, to really trust yourself with that.
Absolutely. And listen to your no, like get to know your no as much as you get to know your yes. Like that's such an important work in this world.
I think
that's a really good starting point, is look for people who really know what they're talking about when it comes to consent as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a wild west out there.
It is. Yeah,
but also there are some incredible people doing some incredible work.
Yeah.
And so it's finding the right space for you. And there's so much more choice even to what there was 5 years ago.
Absolutely. And the industry is shifting. It is becoming more professional. Like if I look back, say five years, 7 years, 10 years, it is shifting and it is becoming much, there is a much more professional element and people are calling out the nonsense, which is great that it's being flagged. So
absolutely. Thank you for sharing on that, because it's such an important topic. And you mentioned before sort of about the last couple of years, I'm curious what you've seen in people the last couple of years in this area of their lives, because obviously been such through unprecedented times. And what sort of things have your clients been showing up with in relation to the last 2 years? And I asked this question because I think so many people, actually it was prompted by your post I saw just before this call about the impact that the last 2 years has had on people, and you were looking at how that has been for yourself as well. So I'd love you to share a little about that.
It's been an amazing gift to be able to support people in the last 2 years and to help them stay in their bodies and process things and, really kind of ground amongst the chaos as well. And including, I've had clients who one is an infectious diseases physician in Melbourne. So she was like so full on. Work-wise, she was one of the first people who was responsible for setting up testing and labs and stuff in Australia, and the pressure she was under, and to be able to support her through all that was just really phenomenal, to be able to give her tools to be able to become more resilient and to try and let go of some of that stress at the end of the day. But everybody's got their own unique story of it, and I've got clients at the moment who are just feeling so touch starved now, having spent so much time without physical connection in the last 2 years, and I include myself in that. It's I've had to really dig deep and resource in my own self-touch and pleasure, particularly when restrictions were really, really strong as well. So and some people's relationships, it brought them closer together. Other people, it was like just shone a light on everything that wasn't working. And just this awareness of like, well, it really became clear very quickly that we can't just keep sweeping stuff under the carpet and pretending things okay, everything's okay, and going about our daily routines and thinking everything's going to be okay on default mode, because we can't. And I think it's made everybody question a lot of their assumptions about each other and about their own relationship to pleasure and relationships and connection and intimacy, and some people needing more space feeling really hemmed in and stuff. And I had one client who right at the start of the pandemic, we were already working together, and then everything locked down in Australia, and her and her partner suddenly found themselves both working from home side by side in this tiny apartment. And intimacy was like this really weird, awkward thing that nobody wanted to initiate it, and they both felt really shy, and that's why she was working with me. And then suddenly they're working together side by side all day long and not having that separation, and it could have completely gone sideways for them, but it was really lovely. Like, they created these strategies to navigate being in that space together, and they discovered that she discovered that she liked to initiate, and she liked to be the one who she'd jump on him in the middle of the day, and they were, you know, their intimacy went through the roof, and they became so much more stronger as a couple through that experience, to the point that the last thing I knew, they were trying for a baby, which was really, really lovely. So it's, yeah, there's so many things. And for me, I think for me, I'm really noticing how sensitive I am around people, around noise and crowds. And I went on a holiday last week, and suddenly being on a plane where nobody's wearing a mask, and it's like, whoa, after what we've been told for the last 2 years, this is like, it's like whiplash. It's like, oh, okay, my whole system's got to readjust to this. And I haven't really caught up with this yet. I'm still processing, and I need to take my time. And I think it's important that we do take our time.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's almost a feeling like, for a lot of people that I've been working with, like, life's back to normal, but they're not but in it's normal, not normal, and it's not normal. And there's this sort of out of, sort of things are out of sync.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm noticing. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're not who we were before. That's it. The really important thing.
Yeah.
None of us are who we were before. It's changed us in some weird and wonderful ways, some of it for good and some of it maybe not so good, but definitely. And I think it's important that we cut ourselves some slack and don't expect things to just go back to how they were. It's like, we're all different. And come out of this a bit battle weary or whatever, you know, we need to just be really compassionate with ourselves.
And you talk about, I love the phrase you talk about, fierce self-love. And I'd love to hear you share a little about what that means to you.
And I mean, that can show up in many ways, but I think it's in this world, in this, you know, when you look at the systems of control that we have in society, like patriarchy, white supremacy, cis heteronormativity, or capitalism, all of these controlling systems that impact us in different ways and impact our bodies and impact our pleasure and how we exist in the world. I really believe that loving ourselves is a radical act of empowerment, and it's a fuck you. I'm gonna be myself, and I'm gonna love myself regardless of how the magazines say my body should look, or regardless of what the media's idea of being a woman is, or a sexual being. And, you know, particularly being in perimenopause, I mean, I think this is, it's something that's so strong. It's like, you know, my body's changing on a daily basis almost. There's like these constant new physical things I'm kind of dealing with, and it's like commitment is like, no matter what, I'm gonna love myself, and I'm gonna love this version of me, and I'm not gonna try and cling on to some idealized version of the past or whatever else. And it's just this coming back to, how do things feel in my body? Where can I find pleasure? And how can I claim pleasure for myself? And how can I put my needs first? And that's what I think fierce self-love is. Yeah.
That's big work. Like you say, it's radical work.
It is. It, on some levels, it's not salt baths and candles, although they're really important to me. I love salt baths and candles, but it's the deeper layers. You know, every time a voice comes into your head of questioning something, it's like, well, who says I can't do that? Who says I can't go out and do this? You know, it's like being able to make those choices for myself. Yeah.
And especially, you mentioned perimenopause. So especially at perimenopause. Mm. So with perimenopause, a few questions. I'd love to sort of, because it's such a time for many women, it may be the first time in their lives they look at putting themselves first, mm-hmm. as things start to unravel. And you know, and you talked about pleasure, and I know something else that we've talked about, how important it is at this phase of life, especially, is rest.
Yeah.
And relaxation time, doing nothing time. So for someone listening, whatever age they are, if this sounds as something like, if there's somebody that's continually putting other people first, or what would you say? What would you say are some first steps to start to readdress that balance?
I'd say this is where getting to know your body really well is so important. So you can actually listen to the signals that are there, rather than just trying to keep pushing through, because keep pushing through is fine in your 20s and 30s, but the older we get, the more detrimental it is. And it's such a big thing. And so it's like, really, how can you tune in a little bit more and listen to what your body is telling you, or perhaps screaming at you? Because sometimes the body has to scream quite loudly if we're used to pushing through. It's like the energy resources might not be there like we used to have previously. And it's like, how can you start to create more space for yourself? And for some people, that's like, it's like looking at the emotional costs, and the mental load is a big one, particularly for women, particularly if you've got kids. How can you get more support, whether that's practical, whether that's emotional, whether it's just, if the bathroom is your only safe place, can you spend more time in the bathroom and create that safe space for yourself and fill your own tank a little bit more? And this all sounds like a cliche, but we need it. We need time out, because at this time of life, everything comes up to kind of be reassessed and examined, and like, is this working? Is this not? Can I keep doing this? How much longer can I keep doing this? Oh, I'm feeling massively frazzled and unfulfilled, and I don't want to be living the second half of my life like this. It's like all these big fundamental questions come up as well. And the challenge is, like, it becomes really overwhelming, and just the confusion that can come up as well, particularly if you're not sleeping well and all these kind of things. So it's like just bringing it back down to like really what works for me and what works for, and a lot of my clients are around my age, is like, what are the baby steps? What do I need right now in this moment? What's the next thing I can do that's going to nourish me? And is that, is that doing some movement practice or some breath work, or listening to something for 10 minutes, something to just get your nervous system, create a bit more space in your system so that you're feeling less frazzled. Whatever it is, just like, what are the little baby steps that you can implement that take 5-10 minutes a day that are going to help shift the balance a bit?
And also, just for people listening, even that question, what do I need right now, can be a huge question. Such a scary question, or an unknown question if it's not something you've been used to asking. So sometimes it's just practicing that, isn't it? Just tuning into what I need. And I love what you share about, it just might be 5 minutes, and it's those little baby steps that start to pattern interrupt the things that we have in place.
Absolutely.
Because for me, it felt like sort of start, this feels like a whole new operating system's coming online.
Exactly. And the old one's just not quite functioning like it should, or it used to. And some days for me, it's like, I just need to go and sit under a tree for 10 minutes and just rest against a tree and just feel my feet on the ground, and just get out in nature, or go for a walk, or just whatever it is. But it's just like, interrupt that pattern and try and do something different. And it's a time to reassess where we've not been putting ourselves first, and where we're giving away our power, our time, our energy. And I think it's these are the questions that we have to ask ourselves if we want to, do the second half of our lives well.
And it's huge. And for women listening, around pleasure and perimenopause, menopause, because the messaging around a woman's sex life at this stage is not very positive in the main.
Yeah.
And so for women listening who maybe their libido feels like it's crashed, their sexual desires crashed, however they're feeling, if they're feeling different around sex and pleasure, what would you say to somebody listening?
I think this is an opportunity to really explore. And as I said before, you know, if you do what you've always done, you'll get what you've always got. But then when we get to midlife, it's like, well, the things I was doing are not doing what they should do anymore or what they were doing. And I think there's so many layers to this, because some can be physical and hormonal. Some of it is emotional and mental. And I think it's important to, what I do with my clients is there's a lot of pulling things apart, slowing everything right down, and finding new ways to come into the body. So you can ask these questions of like, what feels good for me right now? And it might mean that you need way more foreplay. It might mean that you need to slow everything right down. It might mean you need more lubrication. It might mean that, you know, the way we had sex in our 20s doesn't serve you now. And I'll just talk from my own experience. As I mentioned before, a lot of that was drunken and just fast and furious and didn't really know what I liked, didn't know what I wanted. There was a lot of overriding of my own system there unconsciously. And one of the so-called gifts of midlife is like, well, that way of work, I can't override that anymore. Body says no. It's too painful, or it's too dry, or it's too sensitive. And this slowing down is a chance to repattern that and to really rewire our relationship to pleasure in a way. And libido can change. It can change. It feels like it can change flavor. So it might, that kind of igniting hot lust might not feel like it's there. It might be more of a slow build, and that's okay. And also when our energy levels are all over the place, if we're still being pulled in all these different directions and feeling frazzled, sexual energy is going to get used by the body as fuel for different things. So it's like, I think this is an important time to cultivate pleasure in many different areas as fuel, as medicine, as replenishment. And that's, rest is really important. There's a lot in there to work with, but it can be very, very empowering to do. And a lot of my clients are having more pleasure and the best sex they've ever had in their lives. I've got one of the women in my facilitator training, is she's just turned 72, and she says her pussy is more juicy and alive than ever before. And she's experienced her first cervical orgasm that went on for a couple of hours. And there's another woman in one of my other programs who's 60, and she's just said, like, wow, I'm discovering now for myself pleasure just for me. She said, finally, at the age of 60, this is just for me. And like, this is awesome. Like, that's what I'm here for. It's like, this is what brings me so much joy. This is where the empowerment is. So it's not like, when we look at, the messages we get around menopause, it's about, we hear stories about vaginal, all kinds of horrible things about, I can't even say that, atrophy, is that how you pronounce it?
I think so.
Am I pronouncing it right? It's like there's so much fear around this, and I think this is where the more we can really get connected to our own bodies and resource ourselves in self-pleasure and exploration, we're really doing ourselves a really good service here by keeping this part of us alive.
Absolutely. And I've had from speaking to some women who are well into menopause, that I had an amazing conversation with this group of women. They were saying it was like, what worked before didn't work. And I think this is the point where so many women go, oh, it's not working.
And give up.
Give up, because they don't have the the knowledge or the tools or the support to start again. And there's no messages out there saying it's great, start from fresh and learn what works now. And I think that's what you've just shared is so important for women to hear, that this time is actually so rich for discovery and exploration and learning that can take you on a whole new trajectory of your pleasure. And likewise, I have worked with many people who say they have the best sex of their life during menopause, or friends who've said that. And so let these be the messages we get out to the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that seems like a beautiful note to finish on. So I'd love to hear from you to finish, as this is the Sexy Life podcast. What does living a sexy life mean to you?
Oh, I love that question. I'm just going to feel that in my body. I think it's, to me, this is like using whatever opportunity I can to orient to, I'm always asking like, what feels good? And I don't mean this in a frivolous way. Like, pleasure is deeply empowering and essential to our well-being. And so sexy life to me is like, what makes me feel alive, what makes me feel joyful, what makes me feel turned on by life. And so for me, that shows up as, you know, nature, good connection with friends, going out exploring things. I've just had my first holiday overseas in 2 years, and like, oh my god, just to be somewhere new, I'd forgotten how much being somewhere new, what that gives me, you know, just being able to wander around a new town and get lost. Wow. You know, it's things like this. It's very much connected with the senses for me, and what makes my senses feel alive, what lights me up, what gives me energy and joy.
Gorgeous. That's lovely. Thank you so much. And I'll put your in the show notes, I'll put the links to your various courses and trainings and different things. And where can people find you online?
Yeah, find me on my website, mangalaholland.com. On the homepage there is a free 3-part video series that you're welcome to sign up for. It's called From Shutdown to Sensual Satisfaction. So that's there on the homepage. You find me on my website, and I'm most active on Facebook. I do have Instagram as well, but you're more likely to find me active on Facebook.
You can put a link there as well. That's wonderful. Thank you so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, it's been awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Sexy Life podcast with me, Sarah Rose Bright. You can find all the details for me and my guest in the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode, and to make it easier for other people to find out about the Sexy Life podcast, I'd so appreciate it if you could take a moment to subscribe to or follow the podcast, review and rate it on Apple or Podchaser, and do share with your friends, loved ones, or anyone you think would benefit. Wherever and whenever you are listening, I wish you a beautiful day.